Today is the 15th of Av, and if you've seen the Jewish media, you know it's a special day for Shiduchim. And I didn't know this, but I heard Rabbi Stephen Przanski say today that it's called Yom Ahava, the Day of Love, I guess by the not yet from in Israel. And he says that as one of the rabbis who always finds good things in Jewish people says, if it enhances romance amongst Jews, it's a positive day. But let's go back to the beginning. What's the basis? So on Chabad.org, they do a very good job of listing the 7 items that mark today. And the first thing they mention is the notion that young women would dance in Bet Yerushalayim. And we go back to the Mishnah in Tainis, 4th chapter, 8th Mishnah, and we're told, Amar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says, L'hayu yamim tovim liYisrael. There were no days as joyous for the Jewish people, Chamisha Asar Ba'av, like the 15th of Av, Uki Yom HaKippurim, and Yom Kippur. So the same action occurred. Shebohen, on those days, Benois Yerushalayim Yoitzais Bechli Lavon She'ulim, Shelo Levayesh Et Misha Einlo. On those days, young, eligible Jewish women looking for their besher would borrow white clothes from one another so that no one would know whose clothing they were wearing, in an attempt not to make those women who didn't have this finery lack it. So I guess the people who were wealthier had enough to give to others. And they would dance, it says, in the kromim, in the vineyards. Umaha yomreis, what did they say as they were dancing? Bacher, they said, all you young men, because all the eligible young men were sent there, sona einacha uri, lift up your eyes and take a look. Umata boirer lach. And see what you're going to choose. Choose a wife from among us. And then the Gemara said, so the Mishnah says, Al titein einacha benoi. It said, don't set your eyes towards beauty, I would say necessarily, right? Set it towards Yichus, and others would say no. And as Rabbi Przanski said in today's vlog, the Gemara tells us the women who were highly attractive would say to the young men, choose us because we're so attractive, and you know, I guess we'll give you attractive children. Others who may not have had the same top dead beauty would say, consider the families. Yichus is important in raising your family. And it says those who were less gorgeous, etc., would say, look at the mitzvah you can do in marrying a wife. Bedeck us with fine clothes and jewelry, and you'll see that we too are attractive, and you should pick your wives. And this is what happened, they said, this was something that occurred both on the 15th of Av, and it also occurred on Yom Kippur. Rabbi Przanski pointed out that it could be a metaphor in some ways as well. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu married, so to speak, the Jewish people at Har Sinai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the metaphoric chasan, and the Jews are the metaphoric kala. And so we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, can we please have your blessings, your glory, etc.? The beautiful people are those who are steeped in Torah and mitzvot, and it's obvious what their mitzvot are. The ones who said, look to the family, are saying, we may not be the greatest Torah scholars, but look who our fathers were, Avram, Yitzchak, V'Yaakov. We're continuing in their path, and please have mercy on us. And he says, the third ones who said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we may not yet be frum, and we may not do mitzvot, and we may not learn. However, we want to be connected to the Jewish people. And that expression that we want to be connected stems from our holy neshama, and please bring us close. And he said, that's what the day should have us think about, and as to why it was such a festive day. The Gemara seems to indicate that the number of shiduchim that occurred caused it to be a very festive day. We've learned a couple times now that it was on the 15th of Av that the last people who were demarcated for death in the 40th year realized it wasn't going to happen because they dug their graves on the 9th of Tisha B'Av night, and they didn't expect to wake up in the morning, and they did that. And they did it on the night of the 9th. They did it the 10th, the 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th. And up to that stage of the game, they figured we have a mistake in our calendar, that with all the years in the desert, you can lose time. And came the next night, and it says the full moon was visible, and they realized it was the 15th of Av, and therefore the Gezerah, God's decree that people would die in the desert because of the sin of the scouts, the spies, had basically been forgiven. And it says, during the period when the people were being punished and died, there was a less open, warm manner of speaking between HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe. And now it says, once God let them know that the sin had been forgiven, Moshe realized that the quality of his communications with HaKadosh Baruch Hu were the same as the level they had been on before the sin occurred. The third reason...
Gary?
Yeah.
Gary?
I'm here.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Was there a time, a large period of time, where there was no communication at all between Hashem and Moshe?
It doesn't say this. It says here, as long as the doomed generation were still not forgiven, God did not communicate with Moshe in an affectionate manner, whatever that means. Once God let them know the sin was over, God again lovingly communicated with Moshe. So, I mean, that's what it says. I don't know which Gemara or Medrash they refer to, but it's there in the, in the Chabad narrative. So it does not say there was no communication. It says right? It didn't have the warmth that it otherwise had in the past.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. The third item is that when Benos Tzolofchad, the daughters of Tzolofchad, wanted to inherit their father's possession, and the people of their tribe said, if they do that and they marry out of the tribe, their husbands from other tribes will inherit part of our demarcated lands, and therefore we will lose our share to other shvatim. So Moshe Rabbeinu, with the advice of the Rabbono Shel Olam, said that women who inherit a deceased father in the first generation must marry members of their own tribe, uncles, cousins, etc. And it says that this continued to be the law of inheritance in marriage. But in the next generation, it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed the relaxing of this gezerah, and the day it was announced was the 15th of Av, that they allowed free marriage between members of all the shvatim, one to another.
Interesting.
In Shoftim, we read the unfortunate story of Pilegesh Begiva, that somebody had a concubine, and he went into a city, I guess a town, in Shevet Binyamin, and the people there were of low moral turpitude, and basically they gang raped the woman till she died. In the morning, the guy who had the concubine cut her up into various parts, and he sent parts to all the other tribes in Israel saying, look what happened. And obviously the other shvatim felt this was a total degradation of Judaism, a chilul Hashem, and they said to Binyamin, give us these people who were guilty, let's judge them and execute them, and that'll be the end of it. But it says the Shevet Binyamin refused, and so the other shvatim actually went to war against Binyamin. And afterwards, after the war was over and Binyamin was defeated, they excommunicated Binyamin, not allowing the people in Binyamin to marry outside the tribe. Now, with all the loss of the men, it would be a problem because the women probably didn't have enough men. And it says that this went on for a number of years. And eventually, on the 15th, of this too was relaxed, and they once again allowed Binyamin members to marry others. We know that Yeravam ben Nevat set up the northern kingdom in Israel after Shlomo HaMelech died. And unfortunately, Yeravam, who had been a tzaddik, he set up the two idols at either side and said, don't go to Beis HaMikdash anymore. I want you to give your sacrifices here. And he set up sentries, not allowing people to go from the northern kingdom into Yerushalayim. And this went on for about 200 years, we're told. Hello, can somebody mute themselves who's got noise in the background?
Hello?
I'll mute.
To mute conference participants, press 1. To mute, all participants are muted, and they can unmute themselves.
Okay. So it says that 200 years later, the king Hoshea ben Elah, the last king of the northern kingdom, allowed the Jews to be Ola Regel in Yerushalayim again, and that again happened on the 15th of Av. Number 6, when the rebellion of Bar Kokhba occurred, and the Romans took their vengeance, Beitar was the last fortress that stood. And when they seized it, they killed thousands of Jews and Bar Kokhba, and they left the corpses unburied. And they stood there, right, sort of piled up around an area, like I think it was a square, like they looked like fences around, I think, a vineyard. And this was in the year 133 of our current era, and only 15 years later were they allowed to be buried, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a miracle that none of these bodies putrefied, etc., but they were kept in their state as on when the day they died. And it says, again, it was the 15th of Av when this permission to bury was given. And we're told that when this happened, we added in benching the bracha hatov v'yameitiv after B'nai Yerushalayim, right? We say the bracha ending in Al Yechasreinu. The last item that's mentioned, and it may have been one of the first ones that occurred, was that wood had to be chopped for the fires on top of the Mizbeach. And you needed enough wood to be stored for the entire year, because you weren't allowed to chop wood all year round. The wood needed to be free of infestation. And it says that as long as they had hot, hot sun, the hot sun precluded any infestation of the wood. And they determined that the heat of the sun was hot enough up until the 14th of Av. On the 15th of Av, it said this was ended, and they called this the day of, quote, the breaking of the axe, or maybe we should say the relaxing of the axe. And it says they actually had a ceremony, I guess it was a suda, the Kohanim, where they broke some axes to show that they didn't need them anymore. The breaking might have not been baltashkeh. They may have basically taken the iron out of the wood and they could have put it back in again. I'm just speculating. Now, what did the Kohanim do after that? So we're told that the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash worked approximately 2 weeks a year in their time when they went up. The families went up to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, and on the three holidays, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. What did they do the rest of the time? Kohanim who weren't involved in the Beis Hamikdash would then basically become teachers. That was their main fare. They were teachers of Klal Yisrael. They taught Torah and they spent time learning. And one of the Rabbanim said this marked the return to, quote, the Kolel for many of the Kohanim, that they were going back at this stage and they were going to intensify their learning, because from the 15th of Av till Rosh Hashanah, there's 45 days, and this was an intense period of introspection. So that is why today we skipped Tachnun in deference to Tu B'Av. This week's parsha is Akev, and it continues with Moshe's narrative to Klal Yisroel in the last 5 weeks of his life. And because my standard sefer that I like in trying to summarize the parsha is the one printed in 1985 called the Medrash Fez. I've tried others, but this one seems to me it succinctly puts the issues in a readable fashion. And so every time I turn to another sefer, I seem to come back to it. I purchased a sefer this week. It's called The Eternal Fire on Devarim by a Rav Aaron Sonnenschein by Art Scroll. This sefer is like the encyclopedia, but it goes through each pasuk in depth, and after you've read a number of pesukim, it's almost like the Art Scroll Yad Avraham Mishnayis, that you don't see the continuity. And so, you know, I think it's a nice scholarly work, but I'm going back to my standard. So it says, Moshe in this parsha says, Akev Tishmun, if you, the Jewish people, will listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's commands, right, you are going to see prosperity in the present world. It says, the Jews asked Moshe, could you explain to us the concept of schar, a reward for mitzvos, which is a excellent question, because it's a fundamental to us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewards us. It's one of the 13 items mentioned in the Rambam's Principles of Faith. Moshe said, in this world, you can never enjoy the true reward for a mitzvah. And we know it says, mitzvah b'hai alma leka, or schar mitzvah. The reward of a mitzvah we cannot enjoy in this world. We have no concept of how great the reward for a mitzvah is, and the only place it can be realized is in the world to come, because that's great enough to allow the proper reward. Moshe said, in this world, you enjoy the incidental compensation for keeping Torah only. And Moshe said, I know you're going to say, or some of you may say, that's, you know, it's hard to wait that long. And he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a faithful trustee. He can be fully relied upon that you're going to Be aware with your neshama of the reward. Moshe said, if you turn to tzaddikim in this world, you're going to see that they fulfill everything they say. If a tzaddik does that, how much more so? It's a kal vachomer, will God do it? And we're shown a couple examples of what a number of the tzaddikim did. It says that two merchants came and stayed with Rav Pinchas ben Yair in the south of Eretz Yisrael, and when they left, they forgot two measures of wheat kernels. They packed and left. When he found this, he planted it for them in his fields. When the grain grew, he had it harvested and stored in his granaries. And it says, the following season, they weren't back again. And so again, he sowed an appropriate amount of wheat and stored. It says, they didn't come back for 7 years. And when they returned, they said to Rav Pinchas ben Yair, because they knew he was a tzaddik, do you still have our two bags of grain? Or under what we would say the normal standard is, did you sell them for money and keep it? And he says, come, I'm going to show you what you have. And he showed them granaries full. He said, I kept sowing your wheat, and this is all yours. That's the reward they use as what Hashem Kaviyachol could do. And even, he went beyond halachic bounds, but you can assume that a Kadosh Baruch Hu would also go that way. It says that we sow in Olam Haba the mitzvahs. They tell the story of Rav Shimon ben Shetach, who was Yanai HaMelech's brother-in-law, that he bought a donkey from an Arab, and in the donkey's, knapsack or whatever it had, he found a valuable jewel. And his student said, Rebbe, look what a Kadosh Baruch Hu has given you. The halacha is that he could have kept it, but he said, no, I'm going to return it. He said, I only bought a donkey. I didn't buy a jewel. He went and found the Arab, gave him the jewel. And the Arab said, bracha to Rav Shimon ben Shetach's God, in whom he believes and whose ways he follows. And again he says, if tzaddikim are that honorable and that reliable, you can absolutely assume that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is. It says the Parsha also promises what Moshe called the extra benefits, love of Hashem, material wealth, great numbers multiplying the people, bracha of your produce, whatever it is, wine, grain, oil, that your herds will multiply and you won't suffer miscarriages of your animals. And the people around you will realize all the bracha that you are attaining and will realize that this is not natural. Nobody else in the world is on this level of attaining such tremendous material environment, and they too will bless the Kadosh Baruch Hu.